What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hello and welcome to the Katie Halper Show. So sorry for my short absence. I've been battling a sickness, just being sick and the combo of the flu and strep and all those great things. But I'm back. This week's episode is a live radio recording I did at WBAI. I had with me in the studio writer Shuja Hader, and we spoke to Corey Bush over the phone. Shuja Hader is a writer for The Outline. Make sure you check out his recent pieces at The Outline, and you can find those at The Outline. You can also find those on his Twitter, Shuja X Hader. That's Shuja X Haider. And he has a great piece that we talk about the superdelegates and democracy. And since our interview, he wrote a great piece about evil neocons and how they try to give advice to Democrats. He doesn't call them evil. I do. Corey Bush is a pastor, nurse, and candidate for Missouri's 1st Congressional District. She's also a Bernie Sanders surrogate. She's also been endorsed by Bernie Sanders, and she is featured in the documentary Knocking Down the House, which you can find on Netflix, which is about women who are insurgent candidates running for Congress. It features Corey Bush as well as Amy Villela and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And you can find Corey Bush on Twitter at CORIBUSH. Please rate and review The Katie Halper Show on iTunes, and please become Patreon supporters at patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. You can help make this show possible for as little as $1 a month. I kind of sound like Sally Struthers, but it's true. And if you become a Patreon supporter at $5 a month, you get access to Patreon-only episodes. That means you get extra episodes each week. So you get almost twice as many episodes. Sometimes they're extended interviews with the guests. Sometimes they're interviews with an entirely different guest. Sometimes I respond to the questions that you ask guests on Twitter. So you ask them on Twitter, and then I have the guests respond to them. And that's something you can hear if you're Patreon supporters at the $5 a month level. It's less than a drink a month. It's totally worth it. This week's Patreon-only episode is a discussion with Shuja Hader, this week's guest, and WBAI engineer Reggie Johnson. So during the live recording on the radio, we found out that Jason Johnson had been benched. As you may know, Jason Johnson, an MSNBC contributor, said the following in reference to Bernie Sanders. I don't care how many people from the island of misfit black girls you throw out there to defend you. And he is referring to friend of the show, former guest of the show, Breonna Joy Gray, who is Bernie Sanders' press secretary. After we recorded the episode, Reggie Johnson made an interesting point about how the fact that Jason Johnson had been benched, but others hadn't been benched, other people who had said offensive things on MSNBC had not been benched, how that showed that he was actually perhaps the misfit, or at least viewed by MSNBC as the misfit. So if you want to hear that great discussion, go to patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show and become supporters of the show. I'm also going to throw in some audio from my appearance on this week's Rising with Crystal Ball and Sagar and Jetty. Also, I may be doing some kind of live coverage of Super Tuesday. I'll be doing that either on Twitch or YouTube or something called Hot Mic. And I will be updating my Twitter and my Katie Halper Show Facebook page with a link. So if you want to see whether, if, and where I'll be doing some live coverage of Super Tuesday, nothing fancy, no fancy studio, just in my apartment, maybe with someone else, go to my Twitter, which is Katie Halps, that's letter K, letter T-H-A-L-P-S, or the Facebook page for the Katie Halper Show. Also, just a note, during the main episode, I read a tweet from another friend of the show and former guest, and in my enthusiasm, I forgot to mention who I'm talking about, and it's Aaron Mate, journalist, Russiagate skeptic, Aaron Mate. And I read his tweet responding to the benching of Jason Johnson. Enjoy. Hello. Good day, everybody. Good day. Hello, everybody. I'm Katie Halper. I'm the host of the Katie Halper Show, which you can hear every Wednesday at 4 p.m. on WBAI. That's 99.5 FM or WBAI.org on the internets. And I'm here in the studio, as always, when I'm in the studio, I'm here with Reggie Johnson on the keyboards of engineering. He loves that.
You're just going to make up all the words possible for what I do here.
On the ivory and ebonies of the instrument that is the piano of life of, I don't know.
Wow, that's...
You're welcome, world. You're welcome, Reggie.
Yes, yes.
How are you doing?
How are you, Katie?
I'm good. I'm still living off of the fumes of last night's terrible debate.
Oh, my God.
It was so awful. Yeah, and we're going to talk about that.
Well, good luck on that one.
Yeah, I know. We watched it, so you didn't have to. And live in studio, I got friend of the show, writer, journalist, writer at large, I believe. Is that what your title is at The Outline?
That is correct.
Shuja Hader.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Shuja's written a lot about politics, writes a lot about politics for places, including The Outline, The New York Times, where he's written about music.
Once.
Oh, Shuja, you're so great. You're so humble. Most people would be like, I've written four, but Shuja once wrote for The New York Times. Where else? Jacobin.
New Republic.
BuzzFeed. You got it.
Yeah, I was in The Nation last week.
The Nation.
That's still current.
Oh, I forgot about that one. But yeah, you're a funny guy. I'm gonna say you're a funny guy. And do you identify openly as a Bernie bro?
Boy, I don't know.
Sorry, do you identify openly as a Bernie boy?
Yes, that's the preferred nomenclature.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can follow Shuja on Twitter at Shuja X Hader. That's H-A-I-D-E-R. That's his last name. S-H-U-J-A-X-H-A-I-D-E-R. We're also joined by Beatrice. The intern, the Katie Halper Show intern, but so much more. And we're going to be talking to Cori Bush, which is really exciting. Listeners may know, may not know. I hope they know. If they don't know, now they do know that Cori Bush is a native St. Louisan, and she is running for Congress. And she, you may have seen her in the documentary Knocking Down the House, which is a great documentary. It's on Netflix, and it follows her race. It follows the race of Amy Villela and AOC and other insurgent candidates. And she has been endorsed by, no big deal, Amo Bernie. That's Bernie Sanders. So we're going to be talking to Cori Bush, too, and we're very excited about that. And she is a great Twitter also that people really, I mean, she's so much more than that. I'm just saying she happens to have a really, really feisty Twitter feed that people should follow, which is just C-O-R-I Bush, B-U-S-H. And she's a candidate for Congress, Missouri's first district. She's also a registered nurse. She's also a Ferguson activist. She's a pastor, National Bernie 2020 surrogate. And she's a people's champion. So have we called her yet or not yet? Oh, great. So let's just start off. You ready to talk to Dr. Bush?
Let's do it.
Okay, great. Are you there? Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hi.
I'm sorry.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm so excited. Love your show.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we've been trying to get you on for a while. I'm so glad that the schedules could align. I also saw you in Queens. There's a great photo of all of us, Bernie Bros. It's me, you, Dr. Nina Turner, and Dr. Dooley.
Victoria.
Yeah, yes. Dr. Victoria Dooley. I was just going to call her Dr. Dooley. Dr. Do a lot is what I call her. And so tell us what you are up to, why you're running, what you want listeners to know about, ranging from listeners here in New York City to listeners online who are, you know, living all over the world and country, and of course your own voters in Missouri.
Yeah, so I'm running for Congress. First of all, it's the same reason why I ran before. It's about the mission, and it's not about a name, fame, title. It's because our communities have so many needs that seems to get bigger and bigger. The group of people that need help just seems to grow, and the resources are getting smaller. And just coming off of Ferguson, you know, being a Ferguson activist, I saw things that I never thought I would see in my lifetime. Things that I read in books, things that I saw in, you know, looking at archives, archived information, and it happened in my community, you know. And so, you know, we stood up and we fought, and we didn't even know initially what we were fighting. And so now, you know, it was just like, hey, take that same heart. That heart has to be in Congress, and that heart is not prevalent in Congress right now.
And so what did you see in Ferguson? How did that change the way you saw kind of your role in the world, or what you wanted your role in the world to be?
Yeah, so before Ferguson, just working as a nurse, I was pastoring, and I was honestly, my thing was just trying to survive as a Black woman in America that, you know, didn't come from means. You know, I was in the payday loan cycle. I was struggling to take care of my kids and pay student loans. And, you know, and it was just and then keeping my son safe. I wanted to keep my son alive, you know, and my daughter alive in a place where gun violence is just really, really bad. And police violence is even worse to me. So that was my struggle. But then when Ferguson happened, I saw how the community came together, regardless of what regardless of your religion, race, socioeconomic status, you know, people just came together. I saw people that could have been deported, you know, our Latinx community, because they were risking deportation, and they came out on the ground with us. We saw people from Palestine came over to the United States and sat with us and taught us about what to do when you're tear gassed. And they knew they could be, you know, could be a lot. I saw innocent people beaten and hurt just trying to fight for justice.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And thank you for mentioning Palestinians. And that's one of the things that makes Bernie Sanders so unique. It's just the fact that we hear someone who talks about a group of people who are kind of whose humanity is often questioned kind of implicitly. Yeah. This is like an amazing moment, I think, that.
Yeah, it is. And he talks about it, though. He keeps talking about it. I'm so glad that he makes the point.
Yes.
Like, hey, you know, don't try to act like I'm anti-Semitic.
Right.
You know, I love people.
Yeah,
Let's just do that.
Right. Yeah. And also as a fellow, I call myself a Bernie Jew, as a secular Jew.
I've never heard you call yourself that. Is that what you call yourself?
Really? You haven't? Oh, yeah. And Shuja Hader is here on the line, by the way.
Hi.
How you doing?
Fellow Bernie bro. I do. Because I identify with that, you know, that this kind of cultural identity. And I have to say, it's really nice, because I'm so tired of, as a Jew, being allegedly represented by AIPAC, which does not represent most Jews. They are a really disproportionately powerful lobby, and they don't represent most Jews. And it's so nice to have Bernie Sanders, who's Jewish, but that doesn't matter. I mean, it just makes it kind of cool to see, look, this is someone who's saying, no, I'm Jewish, I have a strong Jewish identity, and my Jewish identity actually includes like a commitment to humanity and shared values and shared humanity and social justice.
Well, he's gotten trouble for not attending the AIPAC conference, but did you see who's headlining it?
Who?
It's Mike Pence.
Oh my gosh.
Mitch McConnell.
Oh my,
they're
going to
have Steve Scalise. They're going to have some like literal Austrian Nazi guy.
Wow, that was the only one missing. So glad they got.
You
got
to have an Austrian Nazi.
Yeah, exactly. Because you got to be diverse. It can't be all
exactly.
Americans.
You know, ideological diversity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and ethnic diversity.
That's right.
Austrians. Yeah. Yes. Wow. Yeah. Who will speak for Austrian Nazis? AIPAC, apparently. And do we have any calls, by the way? We want to give listeners a chance to, let me read out the number. If people want to ask questions to our esteemed guests, you can do that 212-209-2877. Again, that's 212-209-2877. Say it again, 212-209-2877. What do you think of, as someone who lived Ferguson, wanted to know what you think of how Mike Bloomberg is portraying himself as a gun control advocate?
Yeah, no way. Yes. No way.
I was hoping
you'd
say that.
Yeah. No way. And it's a no way because I guess when you've been on the other side of that, you know, I feel like this. Everybody can evolve. I get it.
Yeah.
I evolved during Ferguson. I get that. But the thing is, me running for office shouldn't be where you get to see that I evolved.
Right.
What did I do before that? Okay. You know, before I chose to run for office. And so what did that work look like? And so, no, so many people, and this is the thing, Kalief Browder is still dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many other mm-hmm. people died. So many other people are still in jail. So many other people they lost families, you know, because of what he did. So just a regular, I'm sorry, you know, like I didn't really understand till later. It's not good enough because what won't you understand as president? Like, I don't want that kind of president that you got to understand later, you know, at 4 and 8 years after you get out of office that, oh, that was bad. Nah, we good on you. At least out.
Yeah,
I'm not speaking officially from the
sure.
Bernie Sanders campaign, right. Cori Bush.
Right, right. Yeah, what does Nina Turner say? Channeling Bernie, all very fine people.
Yeah.
All very fine people. Yeah. And what did you think about the debates last night?
Oh my God!
I know.
What was that? Like that? What was that? But I'll say this: I appreciate the fact that they let us know who they thought was, you know, who they thought was front runner for real, you know, even besides the reports. So thank you for that. But our guy held his own and what he didn't do. So what was funny is I keep hearing, you know, we always hear about how loud and how, you know, Senator Sanders yells so much, but it seemed like he wasn't the one yelling last mm-hmm. night. One thing that he did, he kept raising his hand like, I want to speak, and other people was just jumping in speaking. He was being respectful. He was doing his thing, and everybody's attacking him, but you know what? He kept his cool. But what I will say is there are so many other issues besides the issues that was brought up on that debate last night. And then also, we got to talk about when do we talk about immigration?
Yeah.
When do we talk about, like, there's so many things that we didn't talk about, you know, even in South Carolina. When I was in South Carolina, and I'm listening to those kids that belong to those HBCUs and talking about what's happening in their communities, you know, and just it's so much happening in that state that was not even brought up to that stage.
Yeah.
What
would you have liked to have been for them to have been asked about?
Well, that's one thing right there. Let's talk about what kind of resources candidates are bringing to HBCU.
Yeah.
Let's talk about they kind of hit on it a little bit, talking about access to healthcare, but access to healthcare is not just having a place to go. It's about having the transportation to be able to get there. And so we have these communities where they're shutting down these hospitals and people have a long way to go to get to a doctor. Well, let's talk about that. Why are we, you know, why are we shutting down so many of the, of those places, and what would they be able to do to help those people in those communities, not just with medical help, but mental health. So it's just a few other things. And then, like I said, immigration, we still got kids in cages,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But you didn't see Nancy Pelosi is taking care of that because she ripped up a speech and she clapped during a Trump speech in a way that threw him major shade. So that's taken care of. Don't worry.
That clap said it all.
That claps freed children from cages, yeah.
Got it. I'll write that down.
Yeah. What do you think of this, you know, the listen to black women mantra that gets repeated by lots of people, but doesn't seem to be lived by most people? And we see this kind of listen to black women unless they have politics that are to my left, or unless they have politics that I don't agree with. Or I saw that I know you were justifiably upset by Dr. Jason Johnson's comments about black, black girls from the...
Yeah.
Black
girls.
Island of Misfit Black Girls.
Yes, yes. Yeah. That was how this meant. The irony is, like, it was amazing because this was his critique of Sanders having an intersectionality problem. And the way he proved that this guy wasn't intersectional, didn't care about race or gender, is that he literally pretended that the only black women who support Sanders are weirdos and like some kind of human shields.
Yeah.
What did you think when you heard that?
The hosts couldn't even.
Oh, the hosts. They were done. Said,
you're going too far.
Yeah.
Which
right.
he was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then his response was, "I don't care," which I believe he said twice. But
right.
You
Thanks
know,
for the, letting the, us know in the, case we didn't know. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. I it really struck me because, for a few reasons. Number one, when you call us misfits, you're calling us misfits because we speak up. It's not right. like we're going outside like throwing eggs at ourselves and doing something that's just like people are like, what are you doing?
Right,
no,
right,
we're speaking up.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you know. So that's one thing. The other thing is, and then you were actually speaking what you want to see, I think. That was part of it. You know, you want to see us isolated. You
right.
want to see
yeah,
people
exactly.
look at us a certain way.
Right.
And then so you want to try to move shine away from these women that are doing great work.
Right.
The other thing was you had to make it about being black. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to, like, why did that? It's one thing to call us an island of misfit girls. It's another thing, island of misfit black girls.
Right.
And then, look, I'm 43 years old.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't been just a girl for a long time.
Right.
And Senator Turner, you know, is not a girl, you know. So it was hurtful that way because no matter what, you respecting people is, that, you know, that let that be just Tuesday. Let that be regular. You know, you don't have to like Breonna Joy Gray. You don't have to like SNT, but respect these
yep.
women. Yeah, right. Senator Nina Turner. Yeah.
You guys are, I love the RAD. What is it? Roseanne DeMauro's RAD. SNT is Senator Nina Turner. Are you RNCB?
No, I get to just be Corey. Just the Bush part is a problem.
Yeah. Right. All right. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Reclaim it. You got to reclaim the Bush.
That's right. I'm doing it. I'm working on it.
I like it. No, that was, that. It's true. And to be fair, you and Senator Nina Turner, you do look very young. So that is a good, that's kind of, even though he was being disrespectful, it's a testament to how young you guys look for your age. So
Yay.
At least you can enjoy that. At least if you're going to be demeaned, it's nice to be demeaned in a way that tells you look young. I would like that. Yeah.
That's right.
But yeah, it really is. It's so funny calling you guys misfits, he's basically saying like, you don't belong in the cool kids club,
right.
The establishment Democrats, like we're the people who get paid to say certain things. How dare you, how dare you like have ideas that don't fit in here? And he doesn't even realize that you're not weirdos. You may be weirdos at the dinner parties that he's invited to, where everyone is corporate and everyone fears any like, political revolution or just like making people's lives better. But they're so out of touch that they think that you're, in other words, you're not, there's nothing outside of the mainstream about you supporting the most popular candidate in the race. What's outside of the mainstream is the fact that people like him or other people at MSNBC think that that's out of the mainstream. Does that make sense? It seems kind of like...
It does, but look, I'll even take that, Katie. I'll take being a weirdo. I don't care what you call me. Just let me deliver.
Yeah.
So look, you call us weirdos, call us, you know, whatever you want to call us, but we're going to deliver to communities and we're going to deliver to those same people that was clapping for him when he said it. We're going to make sure you and your family taken care of too. We don't care. We're not respectful of persons. We're going to help everybody.
Right. You'll get Medicare for all too, even if you clap for that.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll help you out.
And what would you like to say? I mean, there's been so much kind of pseudo allyship and name checking of black women, but then not actually showing up for black women that we see among so many people, members of the Democratic Party and the media elites. What would you like to tell them, or what would you like to implore people to do? Like, how can people actually walk the walk, not just talk the talk, if they care about the lives of black women?
So one thing is educating themselves and not expecting us to do all the education, you know. So you know, and then listen to us. That's one thing that we really have a problem with, is if we use our voices, then, you know, we're either getting too extreme, or we're emotional, we're angry. But we have a right to be angry. I'm angry all the time.
Yes.
You know, give me what we need. So yeah, I'm angry, you know, but I'm going to give you this, you're getting this juice with it too. I think that,
educating people, educating themselves, people seeing, just like I'll just bring up one example. I believe in 2018, the numbers showed that Black women received the least amount of money in contributions to their campaigns, congressional campaigns, than anybody else, anybody else, you know. And we also talk about who carries the most student loan debt in the entire country, Black women. You know, it's like so much of that. So highlighting those things, so, you know, so that people can help us by, you have a table, bring us a table, or you don't have a table, but you can give us one, give us the table. Like I think that's where it starts, because it's one thing to say that you support us, but then you have access to resources, or you have stuff, and you don't allow us in those spaces, or allow us to be in leadership in those spaces.
Right. We're listening. We are at the Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper. I'm being joined by on the phone by Cori Bush, the formidable Cori Bush, who is running for Congress in Missouri. She's an activist. She's a registered nurse. She's a pastor. She is a mother. She is a social justice warrior. And I'm also joined by,
Do you have that long intro for me?
I'm joined by very good, smart, funny writer, Shuja Hader.
That all sounds vague.
Yeah, but I can attest to all of them. And actually, Shuja, and people can call in at 212-209-2877. Again, that's 212-209-2877. And Shuja, I want to bring you into this discussion too, because you also have been someone who, you've been called a Bernie bro as well. You've often voiced frustration with liberal weaponization of identity politics. And this is something that I think really comes to the forefront with Bernie Sanders, because people can't really attack his politics and policies. So they have to pretend that to support like progressive politics makes you a straight white dude. And to
That's the whole concept of the Bernie bro. I mean, the idea that only a certain type of person can have a certain type of politics, that's really limiting, and it's clearly not true. I mean, in 2016, the Clinton campaign really harped on this.
Right.
And, you know, that whole bro concept became a defining feature. And it's coming up again this year. It's a little harder to sustain because time and again you see that it's a diverse array of people who are taking a position in favor of redistributive economic policies, of, you know, kind of a more equitable approach to politics.
Right.
It doesn't align in the ways that word or that term is supposed to designate.
Well, also, I do love when people get all like pseudo woke and they're like, I hate Bernie Bros and the erasure of people of color and women, LGBTQ people. In the meantime, they're like pretending that you're white and saying that there was this blonde woman I remember who tweeted at you like, wow, I guess you don't know what it's like to have like ICE show up on your doorstep.
Yeah. I mean, in 2016, white people called me white so many times I lost track.
Right.
You know, because
Bernie made you white.
Yeah. Because of the political positions that we were talking about.
As Leslie Lee said.
Yeah.
And also you've talked about this and there's a really interesting way that some liberals who pretend to be good in identity politics kind of forget about, you wrote an essay all about this kind of this meta identity of Arab, Muslim, je ne sais quoi that happened. This is like a very long discussion, but basically because of Islamophobia, there's this pan identity of Arab, Muslim Americans that it doesn't really matter what religion you are. It doesn't matter what ethnicity you are, and you're all seen as kind of the same.
Yeah, I think that being Muslim in more ways than people are widely aware of it's more like being Jewish than it is like being Christian, in that it does refer to certain ethnic associations, certain cultural identities. It doesn't. I mean, I'm an atheist, but
And I'm an atheist Jew.
So yeah. Right. So just the whole concept of being an atheist who belongs to that category. I think that exists for Muslims in a way it doesn't for Christians.
Right.
I mean, people get confused by that.
Yeah, and they get confused, and they also somehow you're not really included in the, like, no one talked about Bernie's unprecedented support among Arab Americans or Muslim Americans. No one who cares about pretends to care about this stuff ever mentioned that.
Right.
Because it's just an inconvenient
thing. it's undeniable if you look at the numbers.
Yeah. Amo Bernie. That's, that's right. Uncle in Arabic. Do we have some? Yeah. Okay, we got some calls on the line. Okay. Hello?
Hello?
Hi. Welcome to the Katie Halper Show with me, Katie Halper, Shuja Hader, and Corey Bush on the line.
Well, Katie Halper, when I heard your voice, I just actually turned it on, and I was calling before you even mentioned Bernie Bro.
Oh,
I was calling to ask you what a question about this subject, and I was so happy to hear you talking about it already. It was synchronicity.
Oh, great. And what's your name or where are you calling from? Sorry, I forgot to ask.
I'm Zabby, and I'm calling from Suffolk County, and hello, Corey. And I
hello
hi. And I just wanted to I had heard the term Bernie Bro when you were actually on the show that I think I heard during the time that WBAI was off the air. You were doing a show with the Pacifica Across America. You were either a guest or, and it was wonderful to hear you during that time. And you had said it in such, like I said, wow, what a lovely terminology, Bernie Bro, wow, that's so loving and so sweet. And then to hear this term turned around as a pejorative by the opposite side, my question is, how can we own the term, or should we be owning the term, or what shall we do to take back our term and make it a loving term?
Right.
Because that's how I heard you say it, and that's how you did. You mean it that way?
Well, I meant it in an ironic reclaiming of it, because it was invented as a smear, and so a bunch of us would use the hashtag Bernie Bro. I wrote a piece, I've written a couple of pieces on it, because from the beginning, what we saw is that the Clinton campaign tried to invisibilize all the people of color, all the women, all the LGBTQ people who supported Sanders and the movement he represents, because it's not just about Sanders, right? And so I wanted to reclaim it and also show, this is what a Bernie Bro looks like. And so a lot of us would use that hashtag and to disrupt it. So you have like the three of us here, Shuja Hader, myself, and Corey Bush. We are all people who shatter that notion that you have to be a straight white dude to be a Sanders supporter. And as Shuja referred to, this no longer has any demographic support because Sanders Coalition is such a multiracial one. And he's even doing as better than Biden in among all black voters. Is that the latest?
I haven't seen those numbers, but I have seen that.
Or he's on the,
That it does seem to fluctuate.
Yeah.
Based on the state.
Based on the state, yeah. He always had younger black voters behind
him. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that is a national thing. Yeah. That among younger people of color.
Right. And we have another phone call. And then I want to hear from you guys, Corey Bush and Shuja Hader. But let's take another question. Who are you, please, and where are you from?
Hello, I'm Walter. I'm from New York City.
Hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. So, I'm listening to this, and part of what I think the danger is that, even taking identity and calling it identity politics is necessarily accepting a diminishment. I mean, I think it's the position, the thought, the self-interest that is building the coalition, as people realize, their complex problems, they need complex revolutionary ideas to change things so that things get better. And so even to fight to reclaim a term is playing to the other side.
Sorry, I don't know. How do you mean?
So fighting over the term Bernie Bro, is it a pejorative, is it not, is a losing battle. Let them call you what they call you. Let's just keep the work going forward.
Sure. I think...
Because the opposition is always never going to like you because they're in opposition to you.
Right.
So whatever they do to you and do to how you're identified is just vilification. So an argument about vilification will pull you away from policy, will pull you away from building a coalition, will become a non-issue that they love you spinning your wheels about. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes. So
just be strategic, be yourself, continue to work. And I think that's what's really great about everybody who's spoken so far, the senator and every, the pastor who's going to Congress, and the writer, it's really great who you are, who you're being, and the change you're making in the world. Yeah. You just focus on that. Let history decide what we are and what good we've done together.
Okay.
This is Corey Bush. I will say this, though, when we talk about identity politics, we want to be careful, though, because identity politics, that was coined from Black women. That was coined by, it was Black feminists that coined that. And the point of that was because we wanted, Black women, because of how the system had been towards Black women and so it was like, hey, and so I just want to make sure that it's not like Black identity politics is this, identity politics is this Black thing, is this bad thing, and people are throwing it up like that, something that's in the way. No, it's there for a purpose, because people have to acknowledge that Black women are leaders, that Black women, you can't erase us out of politics or anything else. And so pay attention to the fact that I'm Black and I have barriers that I'm a Black woman and I have barriers, the same ones that you may have, but I also have more.
Additional ones, yeah.
I think Corey brings up a really good point here, which is, for one thing, when people use that term identity politics, it's really hard to tell what exactly they're talking about at this point. But the origin of the term, as far as I know, the first usage of it is in the Combahee River Collective statement.
It was the Combahee River.
Right,
yes.
So the organization of Black women in the 70s. And the co-founder of that group, Barbara Smith, she's very vocally been a supporter of Bernie.
Yeah.
Kind of in direct contradiction to the way people want to create an opposition between economic justice on one hand and racial and gender justice on the other. I think, the point that someone like Barbara Smith was trying to make from the very beginning was that those things are not incompatible. They're actually, parallel and intertwined.
Right. Yes, right. It's true. And actually, I was on an event I spoke at Harvard, and we were talking about this, and it does become, we need a better shorthand for this, because it really is like the hijacking of and the weaponization of and the distortion of identity politics. That's the issue. It's not identity politics. It's the misuse of it and the hijacking of it. And I remember it was great because Phil Agnew was there at the event that I was at, and there were two panels back to back. And on the second one, he made that really important point that you're making, Corey, which is that let's not confuse what's the right word for it? The exploitation of identity politics, using it, because it's not the identity politics that was developed by the Combahee River Collective, right? It's the attempt to actually undermine identity politics.
Well, I think that what you saw throughout the 90s in liberal politics, and then kind of was culminated with the Clinton campaign, was the idea of just reinforcing kind of these old-fashioned ideas of meritocracy and so on, but just giving it a kind of multicultural surface.
Yeah.
Rather than actually trying to create conditions of justice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And focusing on having a more diverse Raytheon board.
Right.
I do think that that's a lot of what the Dems do, the establishment Dems, is that they want instead of a top 1%, they want a top 10%. And they want it more diverse. But they still are interested in not having 90%.
That may be even more generous than...
Yeah, you're right. 7% or something? Yeah. But tell us more about what you're working on in your campaign, Corey, and also how you got... you were in this really moving documentary, Knocking Down the House, about women insurgent candidates. And we see you running and working hard, and you it's kind of, it's heartbreaking when you do lose. So how did you...
Yes.
How did you pull yourself up again and decide to re-enter and not give up?
Yeah, it was rough, I'll say, because... Actually, when I found out that I lost, it was because a journalist came up to me and said, "Hey, are you going to go ahead and give a speech? Because you lost." And he showed me on his phone that I lost, and nobody had told me yet.
Wow.
So it was really rough. But when I looked over to my right, my team was over huddled in a corner, and I walked over to see what they were doing. Mm. They were planning the next race.
Wow.
At the party, while they were planning and organizing, and they continued to do that for the next several months. And so I finally made the decision to run the same way that I made it the time before. It was because I realized that we still don't have what we asked for. We still didn't get what we need. I didn't accomplish the goal. People are still dying and hurting in our communities, and this is the way to go. So you can only win if you run. And
So I picked myself up and thought about every single person in our community that's looking for help. And let's do it again.
Great. Well, thank you so much. We would love to have you on again.
Yes, and I'll come back. Thank you.
Great. Yeah, thank you so much. And where can people find out more about you?
I'm at coribush.org, CORIBUSH.org. I'm not related to George or Jess. Thank
you. Okay, great. you can find her on Twitter at Cori Bush,
which Twitter,
is CORIBUSH. Thank you so much. And you're listening to the Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper. That was Cori Bush. You should definitely keep following a supporter campaign. And I'm here with Shuja Hader. Shuja, let's keep talking about politics. Talk about what we do best. Yeah. Now it's interesting. We just spoke about Dr. Jason Johnson, and we found out in real time he has been benched by MSNBC for his smearing of Bernie Sanders. Now I got to say something. Friend of the show, former guest, has a great, an interesting tweet, which is what Johnson said was horrible, but it's a bad look to throw him under the bus while having no punishment for host Chuck Todd likening Sanders supporters to Nazis and host Chris Matthews equating Sanders surge to Nazi occupation. I kind of think that's true. Or you think it was just more of a personal dig?
I don't know. I think the Chris Matthews thing was so like abstract and weird. He was just rambling. He's a little maybe senile.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, he did apologize for it as well,
right?
Which I don't believe Jason Johnson has done.
He did.
Okay, all right.
He tweeted an apology.
I thought that was particularly bad. It was a, you know, very ad hominem and,
right.
Just unseemly in all kinds of ways. Yeah.
Yeah. I do think it's true that, the systemic bias against Sanders, it's funny. It's like we can talk about the Bernie bro stuff, but it's almost more dangerous to do what Chris Matthews and Chuck Todd do, I think, in some ways, because they have an air of authority to them.
I think you're right. I mean, I think that in ways that don't sound like they're insulting or
yes,
they don't
exactly.
sound like they're attacks. They're always kind of reinforcing these
yes.
Troublesome ideas
right.
about, you know, who's allowed to say what and characterizing, the whole spans of opinion as unacceptable.
Yes.
They do that work every day.
Right. And I think that's why I don't know if you saw any of them. Did you see that someone who works for who's a Pete guy, who's an official Democrat, actually asked for for Bernie Sanders to muzzle Nina Turner.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's happened with that. So Mayor Pete, we should do a segment where we ask them to condemn their bros. Mayor Pete, can you kindly condemn that person? He's an official from the Democratic Party. What about Elizabeth Warren had a surrogate who said a lot of homophobic and racist things.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Ashley Marie is her name. She said a lot of things about Asian people, gay men. I don't think Warren said anything about that. And I don't think that these people are responsible for their most toxic followers, but they say that Bernie is. So I just want them to be
right,
consistent.
Right.
Right. Right. Also, we got some people telling Megan Day, I think they hacked into her Twitter account and tried to shut it down when she criticized Pete Buttigieg. So.
Well, I'm going to take your word for it. I don't track these things as quite as closely.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think that the Bernie bro narrative is really dangerous. And I think that the idea that we actually had, I was actually really surprised that the last debate, they didn't bring it up. They had brought it up in the other debate.
Oh, yeah. It had been in the air so much that I did also think that they were going to, try to get him on that.
Yeah. So talk to us about your let's talk a little bit about the issue of delegates. And you wrote about this at your piece in the outline. Can you explain to listeners the significance of what happened at the not the last debate, but the one before then, when people were asked about giving over their delegates?
Right. So this was the last question in the debate in which Chuck Todd asked all the candidates.
Yeah, exactly.
I believe Michael Bloomberg
called them
contestants
last night. Right?
Last night.
Amazing, yeah.
All the contestants in the game. He asked them if you all go to the convention in Milwaukee in July without enough delegates to qualify as a majority, will you honor the result of that outcome, meaning the person with the most votes will become the nominee. And he said specifically that he was going to save Bernie for last because he already knew what Bernie was going to say. And he went to Bloomberg first. But one by one, all of them said, no, the person with the most delegates will not necessarily be the nominee. And if somebody doesn't reach a majority, then we're going to go through the next stages of the process as designated by the DNC rules. Now, this may not have really been comprehensible to all viewers, I think, because it was in reference to a kind of a wonky feature right. of the process. Basically, when we vote in primaries and caucuses, we're voting not directly for the candidates, but for delegates who are going to go to the convention and vote on the candidates. And the DNC rules make a distinction between a majority and a plurality. Plurality is the biggest number of any of the possible candidates that doesn't necessarily reach more than half. So if somebody doesn't reach more than half, the result is not going to be honored, and they're going to do a second ballot where the delegates get to vote. And the delegates can change their mind. And in the second ballot, this time, what can happen is that superdelegates can also participate. And those are people who are not attached to any candidate. They're people like members of Congress, Democratic governors, former presidents, things like that. They can vote however they want. And in 2016, they were able to vote on the first ballot. Nearly all of them voted for Clinton. So she did go into the process with an advantage.
Right. 1 second. Hold that thought because we have a caller. Please tell us your name and where you're from and your question.
Hi there. This is Steven from Redwood, Queens. Actually, my question has to do with Joe Biden in relation to the majority versus plurality of potential delegates going into the convention. Based on how he's tracked out for Super Tuesday and beyond by, you know, everyone's favorite pollsters, do you see him being a realistic plurality or majority destroyer for the Sanders coalition? And how tenuous of a Biden opposition does the Democratic establishment need to maintain to be able to get through the convention in people's good graces?
Well, I mean, I think one of the biggest, you know, stories of the election cycle so far, of the primary cycle, is that Biden has been crashing and burning, you know, from the beginning, from the first in the results in Iowa. I believe he was in fourth. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was expected from the day he announced to be the front runner because he was, you know, just that type of guy. He was a former vice president. He's been around for a century. You know, people thought he was going to be ahead no matter what.
He's running for Senate, as he told us the other day.
And apparently that kind of narrative is just not that convincing to the electorate anymore, which, you know, the 2016 election probably should have been a sign of.
Right.
That, you know, having experience or being very well established, that doesn't endear you to the voters.
Right. Good. Yes. We have another question. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, my name's Eric. I'm from Williamsburg. I don't really have a question. I wanted to say how great it is to hear you on the radio. You've been preempted for ridiculous fundraising programs for so long. And I met Bernie in 1963 when we both were organizing for the Student Peace Union.
Wow.
I was in Pittsburgh. He came from Chicago with a group of people who were kind of upset because I was organizing a lot of younger people. They thought I should have more politically sophisticated people. I still think I was right. It was just a year or two after that the Vietnam War became strong, and these were people who had a right to oppose it.
Yeah, wow.
That's all I'm saying. I'm really glad you're back on the air.
Thank you. And what's your name again? Sorry.
My name's Eric from Williamsburg.
Okay, Eric from Williamsburg. Thanks for listening and calling in. Another call, yes. Welcome to the Katie Halper Show. I'm here with Shuja Hader. What's your name and what's your question? Hello? And where you're from?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear us?
Yes. I'd like you to talk about this nonsense when they throw at Bernie that he's a millionaire. Didn't he just become one in his late 70s due to book sales?
Yes. So what's your name and where are you from? Just so I can
think. Rebecca from New York.
Great. Thank you, Rebecca from New York. Yes, that's one of my favorite anti-Bernie smears, is that he's a millionaire. Because, yeah, as you said, he recently became that wealthy thanks to the book sales. He wrote two good books. But the thing that kills me is that the thing that would make Sanders a hypocrite would be if after becoming a millionaire, he stopped advocating taxing millionaires. Like, that would make him a hypocrite. If the second that he entered a certain socioeconomic class, that changed the way he thought these people should be treated, that would be hypocrisy. His becoming richer than he was before and having the same exact politics just makes him more consistent and that much more righteous. That's my opinion. What do you think about that, Shuja?
I mean, I think it's a moot point when you have literally two billionaires running, well, one too. Of whom is paying for the whole thing with his own endless supply of funds.
As he tells us,
and is buying people off left and right.
Right.
I mean, and you got to think about how a billion is 1,000 millions.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's an insane amount of money.
Right. It just, it's really
It
ridiculous.
Rhymes, but it's not, you know, really a similar amount.
Right. Besides that, they got a lot of letters in common, but very different. I don't know what's hearts and minds.
I think it's something like $1 billion is as though you filled. I saw this. I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I'm just going to say it. It's as though you filled a stadium with all the seats are a millionaire, and you put all their money together. That's a billionaire.
Wow.
Think about it that way.
Right.
You know?
Also, we should mention this is very related. Last night, while we were watching the debates, while people were watching the debates, and you should remember this for every debate. Often the audience at the debates are not, you know, as Amy Klobuchar would say, Tom, Dick, or Harry, Uncle, whatever.
Uncle Dick in the deer shed.
Yeah, I don't know what like the hell that? She's talking about. Yes. And remember, we can't curse on this show, but we haven't cursed. We're just quoting
that's
Amy Klobuchar.
Name.
That's his name. That's her turn of phrase.
Dick Klobuchar.
Yeah, Dick Klobuchar, who hopefully found grace like her father did with his alcoholism. The people in the audience had to pay a lot of money to get into that debate audience. So just so you know, lest you were fooled by the fact that the two out of the seven people on the stage last night were billionaires, you should also know that to access to even be in the building, to even watch the debate, you had to have paid over, I believe, $1,000.
It was $1,800.
Yeah. Yeah, $1,800.
That was the minimum.
The minimum.
It went
yeah.
up to
yeah.
$3,200.
Yes. So that's those are the people who are clapping, hooing and hawing and booing. Yeah. Do we have any other people on? Okay, we got time for like one more question. And if you have them or comments, you can call 212-209-2877. Again, that's 212-209-2877. Shuja, what's next for you on the – what are you working on next? You got any stories in
there? Oh, I can't reveal.
Oh, you can't reveal,
but
you're working on more things.
Oh yeah.
What's your process? How do you decide what you're going to write about?
You know, it just depends on what pissed me off the most.
That's what it is. You can say that. Yeah.
Right.
Pissed you off? Yeah. What pissed you off that determines it?
Yeah. Once I know I got really angry about something, then I can start writing about it.
Do you have a journal?
No.
Good. Don't journal. Don't process it. Don't talk about it with a therapist, because if you're not angry, then you probably won't be as good of a writer. We got another caller. Yes. Welcome to the Katie Apple Show.
Yeah, it's Margaret from the Bronx.
Hi, Margaret from the Bronx.
The person who was there was explaining about how the delegates are going to be counted, but he never finished. Could he please finish what he was explaining?
Yes.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So in the first ballot at the Democratic National Convention, there are, I believe the number is 3,979 delegates. And those people are all sent to the convention after we vote. So they are pretty much guaranteed to vote for the candidate that won proportionally that local contest. If nobody gets 1,991 delegates, which is 51% essentially, that means that the outcome is not honored and that they're going to do a second round of voting. And that second round of voting is just going to be up to the people at the convention. The delegates who are sent there and then the superdelegates are going to be able to come in. So the superdelegates in themselves, if everyone else voted the same way, depending on the numbers, they could change the outcome of the election. But beyond that, the delegates themselves can change. And so, you know, after the Iowa caucus, you saw on a lot of the networks, they displayed the results with Bernie having like, because he won the popular vote, so he had something like 26% of the vote. And then a lot of them showed like versus the moderates who had like 52%. Right. And it was Biden, Klobuchar, and Buttigieg all added up as though that's a candidate, you know, as that's the, they're standing on top of each other's shoulders in a trench coat, you know.
Right.
So what could happen in that second ballot is that the three of them or and their supporters can decide that whichever one of them is the most viable, they're all going to back that person and kind of instill a coup by the moderate wing of the party. And we're not going to have any say in that. It doesn't matter how we voted. In the second ballot, pretty much anything goes.
All right. Not very good.
It's really not a good situation.
What can we do about it? Can we do anything about it? Jimmy Dore was predicting this, by the way, friend of the show.
Well, let me tell you about the last time it happened.
Yes.
You know, in 1968, Hubert Humphrey won the nomination after winning zero primaries. He did not win a single primary in the nation. Eugene McCarthy, who opposed the Vietnam War, was the front runner, but he did not achieve a majority of delegates. And the party establishment handed the nomination to Hubert Humphrey.
And look how well he
people,
did. Remember President Humphrey?
Yeah, President Humphrey, one of our cherished presidents up there with Lincoln. But people were rightly furious.
Right.
You know, and it led to a lot of public protest.
Yeah, and it's interesting how the takeaway from that is always like McGovern didn't win.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's 1972.
Yeah.
1972 is a tricky situation, though, because you got to think that that was the first election in which only the second election after the passage of the Voting Rights time overturned a lot of the Jim Crow voter completely altered. And if you look at the electorate today, look, young people of color.
Right.
Those are the very
right,
and the demographics are very different.
Right.
Now.
I was jumping from
consecutive
one
elections,
McGovernism to another McGovern. You know, you have Stephen King. All these people. It's like, you know, there have been some elections since 1970. Progressive isn't viable.
You know what? Look what happened to Goldwater. We have no shot program.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Or I mean,
it
why
took
not
over the world? You know,
Hillary Clinton lost. Was
absolutely
she
history? Right.
The anti
McGovern experienced candidate right. Of all time, whatever they
yeah.
called her.
Any more? I guess we have time for one more question, or should we just wait? And Shuja, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Anytime.
Shuja Hader. Follow Shuja Hader at Shuja X Hader. That's S-H-R, Cori Bush, C-O-R-I-B-U-S-H. Tune in next week, 4 p.m. on WBAI to hear the Katie Halper Show. Thank you so much, Beatrice, and thank you so much, listeners. And you can find me on Twitter at KT Halps. That's letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S.
Thank you so much for listening to the Katie Halper Show. Once again, the person whose tweet I read about Jason Johnson is Aaron Mate, journalist, friend of the show, former guest of the show. To hear a very interesting discussion between me, Shuja Hader, and Reggie Johnson about the benching of Jason Johnson, become Patreon supporters at the $5 level at patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. I'm also going to throw in some audio from my appearance on this week's Rising with Crystal Ball and Sagar and Jetty. The Katie Halper Show is edited by Ted Reedy. Our theme song is by the band Cordova.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.